Hello and welcome to the Big Rewind. Sorry.
What is wrong with you?
I'm sorry. Hello and welcome to The Big Rewind, the podcast where we talk about new movies, then rewind back to talk about older movies and retro-themed topics. This is episode 81, the Oscars special 3 weeks after the Oscars special episode special. Hey, Jamie.
What?
Jamie!
Yes, hello.
Welcome to this special episode. That's not special at all, because it's really late in the game for everything.
Yeah, obviously.
It's like, it should have been called Yesterday's News Rewind.
Today! Yesterday's News Today!
Yeah, it's the new title.
That's exactly what newspapers are!
So, yeah, actually. Oh, alright, so it's pretty topical, but by the time, like, you do the sound and I edit it, it won't be Yesterday's News Today, it'll be old news. It'll be last week's news 3 weeks later. But yep. Anyway, speaking of news, let's go to the big news for this week. All right, we're going to talk about the Oscars in a little bit. I'll just go through the news quick. All right, there's no dilly-dallying and you know, spending too much on the news. All right?
Dilly-dilly.
Danny Boyle is going to be directing the next James Bond film.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
What do you mean, whatever? He is.
It's like they confirm this kind of shit and then a few months later they go, no, due to creative differences, we had to change the director.
Oh, I don't know. Does that happen for James Bond? Not really.
Yeah, I'm sure shit like that happens from time to time.
Maybe it's happened before, but with like big names, I don't know if they would really announce it unless it's really...
Fucking Ridley Scott. Wasn't he supposed to be director of Blade Runner and then he's executive producer?
Yeah, but that's kind of... It's his thing, so he can just pull out and just still do it if he wants to.
I'm sure Quentin Tarantino did it once and then he was just like the writer, not the director.
Oh, possibly. Yeah, but that's different. That's not the studio saying, oh, this guy's going to work with us and then changing their minds. It's themselves changing their minds. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Danny Boyle, actually. I like Sunshine. A Trainspotting, I recognize it's good, but it's
Could
not really
you imagine if
my
they're going to do James Bond even grittier? Like,
yeah.
Are they going to do a super British... This is England style film.
I don't know. I mean, he's done both.
Everyone has to have a Cockney accent. Yeah. Ray Winston has to be in the film.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Danny Boyle is good at both things. Like, he's shown in the... Like, Slumdog Millionaire wasn't really gritty. It was kind of...
Well, it had quite a bit of, like, dark moment.
Yeah, but the film itself looked... It looked pretty. It looked... You know, flashy. Yeah,
it was aspirational and all that.
Yeah, I think you can do both. So it's not a bad choice. I don't think, you know, it's obviously not going to turn it into Trainspotting 3. You know, it's not going to be like just hyper camera angles and all that shit. I don't think he's going to do anything like that.
It'd be great. I'm James Bond.
He goes into James Bond.
I'll have a vodka martini.
Wait.
Shaken. No. Fucking stirred, you cunt.
Wait, but everyone in Trainspotting is Scottish, right? They're not Cockneys.
No, I know. I'm saying it has to be Cockney.
Oh, okay.
I can't do a Scottish accent, you twit.
What other films has he done? He's done Slumdog Millionaire, 25th Hour, 27th Hour, or whatever it was called. James Franco thing.
Oh, yeah, 27 Hours.
Yeah, 27 Hours. He did
the opening ceremony to fucking 2012 Olympics, which was weird.
Oh, didn't that have James Bond?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Also had Boris fucking Johnson.
Really?
Yeah.
What was he doing? That's it. Oh, just for 20 minutes. Oh my god. Anyway, so I think that's not a bad idea for a director. Now, Disney, you know how Disney are doing, they're doing live
everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Literally everything these days. But they're also, they're still doing all their live action cartoon films. So they,
oh, what's the next one?
Well, the next one, I don't even freaking know. There's so many, I don't even know. I know Mulan is coming. I know Aladdin is coming. I know Tim Burton's Dumbo is coming.
Right.
That's the only one I'm looking forward to. I know Lion King, maybe? At
Are
some
they
point?
Doing Pinocchio?
There is a Pinocchio movie coming, yeah.
Yeah.
At some, okay. All of it, basically. All of it. Mary Poppins returns. Why not?
Yeah.
And apparently there's going to be a live-action Lady and the Tramp film.
Why?
Which, if you remember, was all about dogs.
Wait, are they going to have a whole bunch of dogs? Or are they going to adapt it to...
No, it's going to be a bunch of CGI dogs.
The thing is, have you seen the trailer to the new Wes Anderson film?
Exactly, yeah. It's going to be that, but live action.
If it was like that, I'd be kind of hyped for it.
Different style.
But it's not going to be that, is it?
No. No. I'm seeing that film probably tomorrow, by the way. I'm really...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not out here yet.
I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, why don't they try something like that instead? CGI dogs eating spaghetti? Who wants to see that?
Mm.
No one even wants to rewatch the old film because it's boring.
No. The original film's really good.
That's a bit harsh, yeah. It's has some charm. But yeah.
It's got a sweet, you know, saccharine kind of flavor to it. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I apologize to the lady and the tramp. Indiana Jones is back.
And no, he's not.
And this time he's got two canes or one of these walker things.
Yeah, great. He's got a Zimmer frame.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's going to be Indiana Jones 5 is set for April 2019, and it's not a joke. That's actually happening.
Okay, so what happens if Harrison Ford dies between now and then?
It's fine. It's reboot time. We're going to get who could be young Indiana Jones.
Shia LaBeouf.
Actually, that's brilliant. That's a brilliant segue because I'm about to talk about Shia LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf is making a film. He's making a film where it's about himself, of course, because he loves it. He loves himself so much.
Yeah, because he's fucking awesome. Worlds of our generation.
he's awful in every way. Not Orson Welles. I mean, Orson Welles is awesome. But so it's going to be about himself. And he's going to play his own father in the film. And someone else is going to play him.
Okay, now he's the Eddie Murphy of our time.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he should play all his family members. I would watch that. Yeah.
That would be brilliant.
That's something I would do.
I want to see him in drag. Okay.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened already. I saw him dressed like a horse in a movie. So there's that. It was in Dumb and Dumberer.
Oh, God. So someone who could be young India, Henry Cavill, Ryan Gosling, though he's in Blade Runner, so that doesn't work.
He's like the same age as Shia LaBeouf.
Can we have James Franco? No.
No. That'd be entertaining.
Jeremy Renner. No. Except he's... No.
Except he looks like a freaking raisin.
Oh, no. He's better. Kiefer Sutherland.
like 60-year-old Kiefer Sutherland as young Indiana Jones. If there's worse... Casting no, choice, no.
Here's,
Oscar.
Here's
it would
how
win.
You do it. Michael B. Jordan.
All right. Sure. Why not? He's the right age, at least, to play young Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Shia LaBeouf film is going to be called Honey Boy.
Yeah.
Catchy title there.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the story?
It's his father and him. I don't know.
Does he get his hand caught in a honey pot or something? And
maybe, yeah, maybe
and
it's...
the pot is really old.
Yeah, and... that reminds me. Did you see the trailer for Christopher Robin?
No.
It's like, I was like, what the hell is this Disney film called Christopher Robin? And I watched the trailer, and it's a live-action Winnie the Pooh. And I'm like,
oh,
what?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I didn't know it was called Christopher Robin. I knew there was a live-action Winnie the Pooh, but...
For months, I was wondering, what the hell is that? But yeah, now I know. Even Winnie the Pooh has to be live action.
Because that's another franchise that wasn't Disney, and then Disney bought it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wasn't it?
No, it's not Disney originally.
Oh, I don't know. Well, not originally, but I know they made a film. Like, there's an old Winnie the Pooh film, isn't there?
Of course, yeah.
But I don't know. I used to like Winnie the Pooh when I was really, really young, but I haven't watched any of it since I was five.
It's designed for young children.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course it is.
There's going to be a reboot, because we need more reboots, of The Grudge. Yeah. You remember The Grudge?
Really? Okay.
You know that franchise they ran into the ground by making too many of them? Well, there's going to be more. So
okay. American or Japanese?
I believe it's American.
Okay, great.
So, yeah, great. I literally walked out of the second Grudge movie because it was so bad. So it's like, I'm done. I've been done for 10 years with that. Because I did like the remake of The Grudge. I thought it was all right. But the second one was just awful. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage news. New section in the show. No, it's not. But he's going to play... Well, you know he was meant to play Superman in Tim Burton's film
like
20 years ago. Well, he's finally going to be able to voice Superman, at least, in a kid's movie. In the Teen Titans Go movie.
Oh, okay.
It's a consolation prize, but he's...
Yeah, that... Like height of his fucking career.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, well, it's a bit of a drop down from
a
big blockbuster.
Why is Superman in that though?
I don't know. Teen Titans. It's DC. I mean,
like, it's gonna be a bit part because, like, the whole thing's meant to be about Robin and Cyborg and whatever.
Probably, yeah. I don't know. Unless the story involves Superman heavily, but I don't know.
Like, is it maybe Supergirl could be in it? You know?
Well, maybe, yeah.
I have no idea what ages everyone is meant to be, so.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I think they're all meant to be pretty young, but I doubt that's even going to come out of the cinema at this point. Like, Teen Titans, is it really that big? I don't know, maybe.
No.
And, you know... Henry Selick, he's the director of Nightmare Before Christmas and what's the name of that film? Coraline. He's going to make a film with Key and Peele.
Oh, cool.
So it's, I don't know what it's going to be about. But they're pretty good.
Was it Jordan Peele won the Oscar for Get Out, didn't he?
Indeed.
Yeah, as the writer.
Yeah, it's an original screenplay. And that's another... I mean, you're very good at segues because we're getting into the Oscars now. Let's talk about...
Excellent.
Because we didn't get to talk... I mean, we talked a bit of the Oscar nominations, but now the Oscars have happened. Can talk about the winners. It's not going to be big news for anybody, but...
I slightly disagree with Best Picture. I thought it was Three Billboards.
Okay. You've seen more of the Oscar movies than me, so...
Mainly because Three Billboards was, like, a more layered story and character, you know, character-based story.
Yeah.
Whereas Shape of Water, it invokes a lot of nostalgia and, like, has loads of pretty elements.
Yeah.
But like, some of the overall themes I felt fell really flat, especially, like, the main character played by Sally Hawkins being mute didn't really have as much of a big impact on the story as I'd hope it did.
Mm-hmm. Is it quite simplistic, like the story?
It feels like most of the characters don't have a huge amount of history or, you know, background.
Mm-hmm.
It's really unsure why this mute 30-something woman is a cleaner at a, you know, at an advanced scientific facility.
Yeah.
Like, they don't hint at anything to do with her background. And it seems like it would have been important because...
Right.
Like, understanding her... how she lost her voice or if
how
she
got
born,
there, yeah.
born that way or whatever it is. And like some of the hardships that she suffered would have then led to a bigger impact about her relationship with the sea creature,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the whole point of their romance is that they connect on a non-verbal level, right?
Right.
So they're having like a very pure attraction-based relationship, right?
Yeah.
With each other. But that has a root cause, which is they both feel like downtrodden people in society, like mm-hmm. ostracized people. But in a weird way, it's sort of like the style and the feel of everything takes over that.
Mm-hmm.
And the film tries to go in a lot of different direction without actually being terribly satisfying. Michael Shannon's character is fantastic. He does a brilliant job of being like a villain.
Yeah, yeah.
But like he hints at that he really likes silence.
Oh, okay.
And so he also expresses an attraction towards Sally Hawkins.
Mm.
But they never really explore that properly. So it's like one scene in the whole film that never really goes anywhere. So for me, it's a good film and it looks fantastic and it has great, you know, moments in it that feel really kind of well constructed sets and great
yeah.
makeup and really good music and set design and everything like that. But ultimately the story was quite basic and didn't have many layers to it. Whereas Three Billboards, you really feel what the characters feel and you really go on a journey with them
mm-hmm.
towards redemption.
Yeah.
But like a Coen Brothers film, I know it's not a Coen Brothers film, it kind of just leaves you. It builds up all these people and situation and everything, and then it just leaves you hanging. And it was brilliant that.
Mm-hmm.
That it'll ever be a sequel, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of felt like one of these Best Picture winners, like The Artist, you know, where the Oscars want to reward a film from a different genre that doesn't usually get that much recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. Like something that's a bit more unusual.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I think
sure.
it's not undeserving. It's just that I felt like Three Billboards was better
sure.
for me.
Yeah,
like, I was more interested in it, more invested in it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean,
yeah.
But I mean,
I think it would have been my second choice. Like,
sure. I mean, I'm happy in a way that Guillermo del Toro got Best Picture because I've always felt that Pan's Labyrinth deserved to probably win Best Picture the year that it came out, but it didn't really get anything. I don't think. Well, it got some recognition, but really, you know, I don't think it even won like Best Foreign Language Film at the time. Which
oh,
is,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is bullshit. So at least he won for something. And he also won, of course, for Best Director.
Yes.
Which, fair enough. I mean...
Fair enough. Fair
I like Guillermo del Toro, so I'm happy he won. I'm actually... Mm-hmm. I was actually okay with pretty much everyone who won. It's just for some of them, I felt like they should have won an Oscar, but maybe for a different film. That makes sense?
Yeah, that happens from time to time, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like Gary Oldman, I'm sure he's fine in Darkest Hour.
I haven't seen that one. That's one of the ones I kind of refuse to watch. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'll see it at some point, but I'm sure he's fine in it, acting-wise. But he's made so many films, and he's been great in so many films.
And he's only won one.
Yeah. Has he even won before?
He's only won one Oscar, and it's that.
Oh, the new one.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. He should have won Best Supporting in Leon. Like,
at least. Or like,
he's amazing in that film.
Yeah. But so many other films. But I don't know.
He could have won for Tinker Tailor.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have.
I think he got nominated, but I don't think he won.
I think he was nominated.
Who won.
Yeah. That's true. It's because he doesn't usually do a lot of, like serious dramas or Oscar friendly films. He does a lot of genre films. And, you know, they don't really reward if he's in the comedy, he plays a crazy character, or he plays a lot of crazy characters, but he does it well though.
He does a lot of films.
And I mean, you've seen Three Billboards. I mean, we like Sam Rockwell as an actor.
I'm so glad he got it. I mean, he should have got it for Moon, but
yeah, for so many other movies again. But you know, I hear he's really good in Three Billboards, so
yeah,
probably deserving.
He's the best like racist.
Oh God, he's the best racist I've ever seen.
Racist, violent, bent cop I've ever seen.
Oh my God, yeah. Better than Edward Norton in American History X. I thought he was the best racist.
But he's smart. Like Sam Rockwell's really dumb. So
top 10 best movie racists. You've heard it here first on the Big Rewind. The most ill-judged top 10 on the internet right now.
Yeah, you could have one like it's top 10 actors that aren't anything like their character.
Right.
You see what I mean? Like, I guess Daniel Day-Lewis could be on it because There Will Be Blood. Like, he's not like that in real life.
No, no, of course.
Like, there's
not.
There's nothing in him that's in that kind of thing.
Sure.
You see what I mean?
I mean, yeah, speaking of which, I was kind of disappointed that Phantom Thread, did they even get anything? I mean, it got nominations.
Got costume, I think.
Yeah, best costume. Great. I mean, that's an easy one. But yeah, that's a shame because I thought he was great. I thought the actress was really good. I don't even know if she was nominated for best actress.
Remember.
You know, so that was a shame. But did you ever see pictures of like Daniel Day-Lewis in real life? He's got he's got loads of tattoos all over his arms.
Okay.
It's weird. He always plays these dignified characters like Lincoln and stuff, but
yeah, true. But then he's always clothed, usually.
Yeah, it must be such a pain in the ass to put makeup on his arms every time he has to do a film. We were talking about I, Tonya. You've seen I, Tonya.
Yeah, I really enjoyed I, Tonya. It was anarchic. I like it when it broke the fourth wall. I like some of the documentary elements. They at the end they sort of show the real people and how it compared to the, you know, what they did, and they did a really good job of interpreting it. The script pacing was what kind of let it down a little bit in terms of keeping the story interesting all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's like real life. It deserved to get Best Supporting Actress.
Okay. Of course, Frances McDormand won Best Actress.
Best Actress, which totally deserved. I'm glad she's won it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she hasn't won it in the past.
I mean, she did. She won it for Fargo, but I think that's it.
Oh, she won it for Fargo. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, all right.
But I was surprised, actually. I didn't think they would give it to Frances McDormand, but I'm happy
she won it. The other options, some of them have five. Like, come on.
That's true. And as for, you know, as for the film I wanted to win, Dunkirk, it didn't really win any of the big awards, but it won.
I know. It won, like, did it win special effects?
No. It won four Oscars, technically, but it's like editing, sound mixing. Is it three or four? Sound mixing and. Oh, maybe that's it. I think it might. Oh no, editing as well.
Okay.
So nothing, you know, nothing amazing, but you know, it's still worthwhile, I guess. But
it's a great film. I absolutely love that film. So
I think it deserved better than what it got. What's the other one? Blade Runner 2049 won Oscars as well.
What, special effects? Right?
I think it did win. It won best cinematography.
Yeah, that's fine.
And best worst sequel. So, well done
best
there.
Best worst sequel.
Yeah.
What was the best sequel?
Best sequel was War for the Planet of the Apes. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Well.
It's the first one that popped into my head. But anyway. What one worse sequel?
Yeah.
I just told you. Blade Runner 2049.
No, you said that was the best worst. What was the worst worst?
The worst worst. Oh my God, there were some really bad ones last year. I'm trying to remember them now. Oh, let's see. Movie sequels 2018.
17.
Shut up. You're right, but shut up. How dare you? How dare you? Maybe 50 Shades Darker could probably be the worst.
Oh, yeah.
That looked pretty bad. Oh my God, I just clicked on an article about sequels and reboots, and they spelt Blade Runner 2049, Blade Runner as one word. Yeah, and they spelt, I think they spelt Thor Ragnarok, they wrote Ragnarok or something. So clearly one of the best news sources out there.
Fast and Furious was pretty fucking shit.
It really was.
Yeah.
Did you watch the show itself, like the Oscars, or
no? Fuck that.
It's really late. Yeah,
it's really late for us. I ain't got time for that.
I watched most of it. The show itself, you didn't miss anything. It was pretty bad.
Yeah,
it was pretty bad. I don't know if we mentioned that, but yeah, Jordan Peele won for Get Out. Yeah, I think we did mention it. Best original screenplay.
Good.
Did you get to see Get Out in the end?
Not yet, unfortunately. I've got it. I just ordered it actually.
Oh, okay.
Because it's out on Blu-ray now, so I thought I might as well order it.
It's good. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about the ending. I felt could have been a bit better, but apart from that, I don't know. I liked it. It reminded me of being John Malkovich a little bit for some reason.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to, but
that's quite high praise.
Yeah, yeah, but it's mostly. I mean, you'll see. I don't want to ruin it for you. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know the Oscars. I really think they need to improve. Everything, like the show, they need to get a better host than Jimmy Kimmel, because he's fine as a, you know.
Oh, he's milquetoast.
He is. I mean, he really is. He brings no energy to the show. He's just kind of standing there saying stuff. It's like, that's not good enough, dude. You need to, like, I don't know.
They need Dave Chappelle.
Maybe.
Just to fuck things up.
Yeah, at least he's got, you know, at least he's got some energy to him. He can walk around the room, keep you interested. Jimmy Kimmel is just like, you're looking at your watch like, all right, when does the when's best picture already? But
yeah,
I don't know. It was really, really dull. So that's the Oscars. All right. We don't need to stay too long on this. It's probably time to go to the big review for this week. And if you hear me purring, that's because, well, you'll see.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be.
So, we're going to be talking about Black Panther, the latest Marvel billionaire film. That has just rivaled Avatar's record for.
Really? I didn't know it did that well.
It did that well, yeah. I don't know if it's surpassed Avatar, but it's either getting there or it's probably going to.
It hasn't surpassed Avengers, though, has it?
I don't know. Did Avengers surpass Avatar even? I don't think so.
I don't know anymore, no.
I think Avengers maybe made like a billion or something, but. Yeah, Black Panther's already done a billion, so.
Okay.
But anyway, box office aside, I went to this movie. I mean, there's a lot of hype around this movie.
Oh, so much hype.
So much hype. And I went in wanting to like it, and I came out, I liked it. That's about it. There was nothing. It didn't wow me away.
It was really generic. It was sort of, it had a very generic structure. Marvel have done it all before in terms of like, oh, the villain is just like the evil version of the hero, and you know, they're related, and it's. I think what sold it for a lot of people was the cultural diversity, the sort of maybe slightly unusual nature of its setting, and at least in terms, all right, when I say unusual, I mean in terms of how much coverage African culture has had in Hollywood,
which is
not a huge amount. And when it hasn't always been very positive.
No, that's true.
But to show like a advanced civilization and a utopia, just have a nearly all black cast. It was nice to have. A lot of the hype around it was related to the culture.
Yeah.
And not so much of is it a good film? Is it an intriguing film? Does it interest you? Does it capture your heart? Does it do any of those things? And it's like, it looks pretty, it has some basic elements and there's some cool scenes in it. But apart from that,
exactly.
It's no better than like the Thor 1 or like.
Yeah, that's.
Iron Man 1 and whatever.
I would pretty much, when I came out of it, I was ranking it as on the level of the Thor movies, pretty much. Like, it's good. Yeah. It could be better.
Well, it's very self-contained. It is an origin film as well, and with the films being like really close together nowadays, they have to be careful about how much they affect the overall universe. Look at Thor Ragnarok, and spoiler alert, he loses an eye. But they modified the trailers so that he still has his eye. For other films.
Wait, that's true, so, yeah.
Yeah, so that you didn't get that plot point. So they do have to be really careful, which is why it's so self-contained as a film.
Right. I was a little bit... That's one of the things I was a bit disappointed by. I really felt like they set up a lot of cool stuff, but it never really goes all out. It's very restrained, and it's very much the same structure as Thor Ragnarok.
And apparently vibranium is just like this super overpowered material that does everything you want it to. It's a bit too magical in that sense. There wasn't enough, restrictions on the technology. I didn't quite understand, so we've got this material, therefore it means we're a super advanced civilization that nowhere else in the world can have.
Wasn't it because they've had it for a very, very long time, so they kind of...
No, but she was developing new stuff.
Yeah, she was.
During the film.
But she's meant to be a genius, though. She's like that... The way they kind of... But that's what I'm saying. Like, the way they set things up was interesting, but it was so predictable. Like, as soon as they started talking about this, this magnetic train or whatever, and and it can take off, it can get rid of your vibranium if you stand in it. I'm like, oh, well, obviously someone's going to stand in it later on, It's like... Yeah.
It's a bit like Star Trek, where they have the immortal blood, and you're like, someone's going to die later so they can use that in order to bring them back to life.
Yeah, and it was very much like James Bond as well, where it's like, and there's this pen as well. It does something silly. You probably won't use it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to be super important later on. But actually, at one point, they do something like that, but it never pays off. Like, there's a joke about sneakers, about shoes that T'Challa is going to wear, I guess, but he doesn't really, does he?
I don't know.
She makes a joke, they're very quiet, so they're called sneakers, and it's like, oh my god.
I think that's just a self-contained joke.
Holy shit, if that's all it was, That was not worth it. That's the worst joke I've ever heard in my life.
I heard people audibly groan in the cinema when that.
Me too. That there were some good jokes in the film. That was not one of them. I mean, obviously, in terms of visuals, the film looked really good.
It did. No, absolutely looked fantastic. I loved the colors and the design and the costumes.
Mm.
Was brilliant.
I mean, all the action sequences were really well done.
I particularly like the waterfall and the one-on-one combat.
Yeah.
Stuff that I thought that was done really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good because they took away his powers.
Yeah.
So it became a bit more high stake.
True. Yeah.
You know.
Although there was one thing I kind of wish they had done, the Killmonger stuff a bit differently. Like I really liked Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger.
Yeah.
I thought he was good.
Yeah.
Acting wise, I think pretty much everybody was really good.
Everyone suited their role really well.
Yeah, Andy Serkis was just insane as that villain. But he was funny at the same time. And Martin Freeman as well, you know, it was pretty decent.
He is what he is. I don't know if he's totally necessary, but at the same time, he's just sort of there.
I mean, he was necessary in this particular... I mean, he wasn't very necessary in Civil War, I don't think, but in this one, he was, because he's kind of proof that, because they're talking about not letting people in to Wakanda, and they let him in, and he turns out to have fucking like saved the day single-handedly when he was shooting those ships and stuff. So
yeah, I get what you mean.
He's the embodiment of that, basically. So they were all good, and Michael B. Jordan was good. But I really feel like when Killmonger takes over the throne, spoilers, it's not a spoiler. If you've seen Thor Ragnarok, you know exactly what's going to happen. So when he takes over the throne, then it's like 10 minutes go by and it's the final fight. And I was like, I mean, why didn't you do that at the start? Like, maybe Killmonger can take over the throne right there, like in the first 15 minutes. And then you see T'Challa slowly rebuild his...
I do agree with you.
Then you spend a bit more time with T'Challa in his inner conflicts. And I don't know, it would have just been more interesting.
Yeah. I think they would have done it better if they sort of based it a bit more on Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, where, you know, there was a bit more betrayal and, you know, the politics, the internal politics of Wakanda really show themselves to not be so unified, but fractured. And
there are
several kind of people who want the throne, and it's sort of the whole, you know, the whole of Wakanda kind of disintegrates a bit. And because in the end, all it is like one side be another. It would have been nicer if like, you know, the each of the factions, like they're supposed to, like, each of them are supposed to be sort of in control of different elements of the governance of Wakanda. So it would have been nice if someone was in control of the military side of things. And I kind of guess they did this, where it's like they lead the military coup in a way, but then you would have the people who control the money, for example, and that would have to have a concession in order to agree with it. Because apart from the blue guys, they're like the blue guys, and then you got the mountain people. But then there are like three other factions that sort of just disappear and don't really.
They show a lot of these different. Parts of Wakanda, but they don't really go into it. Like, all you know is that there's one guy that wants to keep Wakanda as it is, and then there's another guy who lives in the mountains, M'Baku, who's gonna help them out.
I get that it's a Marvel film and they're gonna keep it simple, at the same time, for me, you could have had a little bit more there just to set up the factions a bit more rather than it just be color coded. We all wear green, we all wear blue.
That's the thing that goes into what I was saying, where it's like it's a very restrained film, And it didn't really need to be, like, you didn't really need to have, at the end, he's kind of pissed off at his father for closing Wakanda off as much as he did. But he's not that pissed off, because right at the end, he's like, and I'm the proud son of T'Chaka. It's like, well, I wouldn't be that proud. He was kind of an asshole. You know, they didn't really make any big, you know, political statement, and it was kind
The film made one big political statement, at least in some ways, which was basically that black people are oppressed all around the world. And I mean, I get, yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And here you have a powerful black nation that can help them, and they have to choose whether or not to take part or not to take part. Yeah. And weirdly enough, you can look at it from a colonial perspective as well, kind mm-hmm. of like the Congo, for example, is an extremely mineral rich area that over the last, I don't know, few hundred years, the British Empire, you know, and other empires,
Belgium as well,
took loads of resources and never paid back.
So yeah,
that kind of sets up the mentality of the Wakandan,
right? Yeah,
which is quite interesting. But you kind of have to think about it a lot further than what's in the film,
exactly.
To kind of get that.
That's true.
The film isn't like explicit about that mm-hmm. as such, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think the film doesn't really mention slavery at all.
There's a couple of hints. You know, but it's like, doesn't the girl call Martin Freeman colonizer at one point or something?
Yeah.
That was meant as a joke, but there's a couple of hints like that.
But the thing is if this film is, you know, supposed to like inject the struggle of modern black people, then there's a lot more you could do with it. But again, it's Disney. They don't want to be too controversial, but they do want to obviously tap into a very wide audience.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. I mean, I think if it hadn't been Disney, it might have been a bit more forthcoming, a bit more bold with its ideas. And also, like, if you have Killmonger show up and take over the throne early on, then it would have been good to see Killmonger use Wakanda in the wrong way. So that you can can see how dangerous it could be, but you don't really get to see that because Martin Freeman stops them. And I mean, you see a little bit of that early on with Andy Serkis using Wakandan technology, so you know it's dangerous, but you don't really know the full scope of how messed up it can be. And you never get to see that. Maybe in a sequel, we'll see.
I thought the music selection as well was good. The folk and modern music that they put in it, I thought it all kind of fit together quite well. I think that's something that people really enjoyed general was that the whole film did fit together quite well.
It did.
You know, nothing was so jarring or so out of place that it pissed people off.
No.
And therefore it's like, you know, it's a satisfying Sunday movie that you might enjoy to go see. And it's got a wide enough appeal. So that's why it makes so much money.
Yeah. Everyone can. It's basically.
But that can set things up for a disappointing sequel.
Possibly.
Because people then go, oh, we were so safe with this one and sort of like so cookie cutter with this.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to be with the next one. And then you have a bit of a flop. This is basically Thor. Like, the second one's terrible.
Yeah.
And then you give it to someone crazy like Taika Waititi. And then he makes something funny and new and a bit interesting. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get that franchise back again.
I mean, I didn't hate Thor the Dark World. I think it did some things well, but a lot of things not well.
Yeah.
It's basically like what worked in the first Thor mostly was all the Shakespearean stuff that's happening in Asgard, and you didn't really get much of that in the second one. You know, it's the kind of thing you expect more of and you don't. So I see what you mean. Like, if in Black Panther 2 it's about the same scale, it'll be a bit disappointing. You know, like the Captain America movies have just been getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah, they they had different beginnings.
Yeah. And Iron Man as well. Like, I mean, it was always
It was one of the first, though, in terms of this universe. So, it felt fresh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of the characters in Black Panther. I mean, T'Challa, you know, was it Chadwick Boseman is his name? He was pretty good. I liked Lupita Nyong'o. I mean, she's pretty good as well. My favorite character was that warrior woman. I forget the name of the character. The actress is Danai Gurira. She's in Walking Dead.
Yeah, of course.
She plays Michonne in Walking Dead. And she was...
Yeah, she's fantastic as Michonne.
Yeah, she is. And she was badass in that. I really like the casino scene. Where she's just like, she's taking on like 10 guys and then she jumps to the ground floor and like takes 10 more guys. it was cool. Yeah. I mean, it goes into what I was saying about the action sequences as well, where it's just, very well done. Basically, if you liked the character of Black Panther in Civil War, he does a lot of the same kind of things in this movie.
Yeah.
You just get more of it. So.
And that's why I'd say I do recommend people seeing it because it is enjoyable.
Yeah,
it's not pushing the boundaries, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree. I would definitely recommend seeing it if you haven't. If you like, you know, the Marvel movies, there's no reason not to see it. I mean, isn't you can jump to Infinity War, and I don't think you would be confused if you miss Black Panther.
No, you know. Yeah.
It's not essential, I guess, to
no, not like Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. If you miss Civil War, you might not get Black Panther at all because there's a lot of stuff wrapped up from Civil War in that. But Infinity War would just be nonsense to you. But if you miss Black Panther, you won't miss any of the overarching story. You might wonder what happened to a couple of people. But yeah, I would still recommend seeing it though. Should we go to the big recall for this week?
Go.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about something ridiculous, aren't you?
Yeah, so I don't know if mine counts, but...
It does not count. Please disregard all...
There are certain things
of Jamie.
That I've watched in the past that every now and again I get a craving for and I just want to watch it because it's satisfying.
Pornography!
One of these things is Babylon 5. Not everyone likes it.
Oh my God, like, you and Babylon 5, get a room already.
Yeah, I know, I enjoy it. But another one of these series, a British... you know, drama called Sharp with Sean Bean in it when he's a bit younger.
Okay.
Like he's not super young in this, but he's younger. And it's set in the Napoleonic era.
Of course it is. Every Sean Bean series is set in the past for some reason.
Yeah, even if it's fantasy.
Actually, on Netflix, they just released something called like the Frankenstein Chronicles.
Yeah.
And it's got Sean Bean
and
in
he's
it.
He's in it.
Yeah. And it looks the same as every Sean Bean thing ever made.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, because he's in Lord of the Rings. Yeah. He's in Game of Thrones.
Sharp.
Yeah. Yeah. He needs to be in like Robin Hood or something.
I'm surprised. He probably was in Robin Hood, and we just don't know.
But the thing is, like, look, he's great. I think he's a really good actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't necessarily have the biggest range, you know, as an actor. But he always does such a good job for what he's given. Mm-hmm. And in this, he fits perfectly. Like, the character's from Yorkshire. He's from Yorkshire. A lot of him is in this, it feels like.
What's the story? What's the synopsis of
the
Sharp?
The basic premise is that Sharp is like an older soldier that kind of is in the right place at the right time to save Wellington, right? And if you know your history, Wellington's really important in terms of the Napoleonic Wars for the British. And he saves Wellington, and Wellington makes him an officer because of that, which shoves him into command. And then the stories just go on about him commanding troops and, you know.
Is it?
And then basically each episode, which each episode's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But each episode is like a mini film that encompasses like one big conflict. But there will be, you know, continuous themes throughout, or certain actors will be in all of them. And he sort of develops the relationships with certain soldiers and women. And but it can be a little bit like Star Trek in in old times, because like he shags quite a few women, and he is the center of the universe a lot of the time. And
right.
And we're all rooting for him to like get his own back, no matter what it is. And then there are like bit part actors who are actually quite famous people.
Right.
Liz Hurley is in it before she's like super famous.
Okay.
Mark Strong is in it.
Uh huh.
There's a few others that escaped my mind, but I always found it super satisfying to watch. It's not the best because like the budget is really variable, and sometimes the battle scenes can get a bit weird because it's obvious they couldn't get enough people, or like explosions and stuff like that. So
it sounds great.
It is. I really like it, especially I like that they like they make the French to look really evil.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not that difficult to make us look evil.
Yeah.
You just have us laugh in that way.
Yeah, no, they have this one guy as well who's like persistent throughout a lot of them, who's like one of the main villains.
He's like Javert in Les Misérables or something.
Yeah, he's like this bald little French guy who tries and controls everything from the shadows, and he's like a spy in that.
Like Napoleon. Yeah.
And yeah, Napoleon's like not in it at all except for like one episode.
Yeah.
Like Napoleon is like constantly in Russia most of the time, while Sharp takes place pretty much in Spain and France.
Mm-hmm.
And then they only really see Napoleon towards the end.
So is it based on actual things that happened?
Actually is. They try and put some historical fact into it.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, when battles were, how the war went, the fact that Napoleon was exiled and came back and started up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They do things like that. And it's weird because most of it is like in the 90s, and then there was one in like 2000 something. There was a couple of like late ones, like they did.
Seasons?
No, just one-off episodes.
Oh, okay, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, there's no real seasons. They're like all connected.
Just one block.
Well, it's because each one is a movie. Each one is considered a TV movie.
Right.
So, because they're so long.
Mm-hmm. So it's like it's almost like a mini series, like a really long mini series.
Yeah, it's more common now, actually, because you'll get stuff that might be an hour, you know, hour
and
a half.
Yeah.
Because production values have gone up a lot in TV, I find, especially in the writing department. But anyway. And things like Netflix do, and HBO and Netflix, like they do a really good job, I feel, of like upping the game of TV.
That's true.
I highly recommend Mindhunters.
Yeah.
So good.
I watched
so good.
Actually, based on your recommendation, I watched the first episode. It didn't really grab me, but I'm sure it gets interesting soon after.
Yeah, it's second and third episode that you really get caught by it, because they're just doing setup of the premise in the first episode.
Yeah.
But the thing is it's just shot really well.
It is.
Anyway.
So would you recommend Sharp for it? Say someone is a Game of Thrones fan, would they like Sharp?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, they would, because it's a more of a personal drama than a political drama.
Mm-hmm.
But if you like Sean Bean as an actor, you should definitely watch it, because this is it's his largest single body of work.
All right.
You know? he's been sharp on screen longer than any other character he's ever been.
Longer than most shots have been sharp on screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the actual shots.
Yeah.
He's been in focus longer than those.
Well, you think about it, he's only in one season of Game of Thrones.
That's true, yeah. I'm surprised they didn't bring him back as like a spirit or something. They could do it. Isn't there a dude who's basically made of ice? Or did I dream that?
Okay.
I don't know. There's a guy who's all blue and shit. You can have him come back.
Yeah.
No?
Maybe.
They got dragons and shit.
I think he's busy.
Is he? Young Frankenstein Chronicle. Who's going to watch that?
A lot of people.
To be fair, I did consider watching it. I might actually watch the first episode at least. But yeah, so you definitely recommend Sharp.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about a film called Modern Problems from 1981. It's a comedy, I think. It's not.
Are you sure it's not an instructional video on how to use condoms?
It sounds like one of these, like, those old short, like, goofy cartoons where it's like how to, you know, how a modern man can ride a bike. And it's like goofy doing crazy shit. That's what it sounds like. But no, it's a comedy with Chevy Chase, the great Chevy Chase. One of my top 50 actors of all time.
Okay, fair enough.
50 is so many actors. He's in there somewhere. It's you know, he's one fish in the sea, but you know, he's right there with the rest of them. It's not very good. Credits. No, I will elaborate a little bit. The story actually could have been good. It's a guy who gets dumped by his girlfriend, and then somehow he comes in contact with radioactive waste, and he starts to have powers, like he can move things with his mind. And I was like, oh, this shit's gonna get good. It doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't though. It's the jokes are so friggin' weird. It's just like one character would just do something horrible to another, and that's the joke. And I'm like, I don't get what's funny about that. Like, there's one bit where Chevy Chase makes a guy he doesn't like in a restaurant, he makes his nose bleed, but he makes his nose bleed a lot. It's just like gushing out, and I'm just like, that, how is that funny? That's horrible. It's just like,
was this directed by Robert Rodriguez?
Yeah, it might as well have been. No, because Robert Rodriguez makes fun movies. This was This was actually quite boring. And yeah, it's just Chevy Chase is an asshole. Like, as soon as he gets these powers, he's just like, he doesn't use them in fun ways. He uses them in horrible ways. And the story just doesn't move forward. It's just kind of, it's just really disappointing because I like Chevy Chase and he makes a lot of good comedies. There's a film called Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I don't know if you've seen that.
No.
It's directed by John Carpenter. And it's an Invisible Man comedy, basically. And it's probably one of the most underrated, like, you know, John Carpenter films out there. So watch that. That's my recommendation. Watch Memoirs of an Invisible Man. But yeah, you might want to actually skip Modern Problems altogether. I can't think of something about it that's like, that makes it worth at least, you know, considering to watch. You know, like, can you think of other Chevy Chase films that are better, that would be worth seeing? Like, I would say Three Amigos, definitely. Have you ever seen a Chevy Chase film, even?
I have. I'm sure I have, because I've seen...
You must have seen National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yes.
That's on literally every Christmas in in England.
Yeah.
I've seen it way too many times. There's also the...
Oh, Caddyshack, of course.
Caddyshack, yeah. That's a great movie. Even the film, like, Funny Farm. He made a film called Funny Farm that's not great, but it's still like something. It's still funny. Like, he's still likable in it.
Oh, he's in Last Action Hero.
Oh, yeah, briefly, as himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
What else? What have you seen?
Well, I'm going through.
Maybe I need to introduce you to the wonderful world of Chevy Chase.
You kind of do, actually, because it's not something... I haven't seen a lot of these.
Oh, man.
If any.
Spies Like Us is pretty good. It's a good movie as well.
No. I'm looking for it now. Like, no, not really.
So this whole time you were just thinking, who the fuck is Chevy Chase?
No, I know who he is.
Yeah.
I know of him, but it's like, I just haven't.
Isn't he in the Community, like the TV show as well?
That's it. Yeah, that's where I know him from. Yeah.
That's the. He's in Hot Tub Time Machine. There you go. There's something
yes,
you
is.
Might have seen.
No.
Okay. That even Hot Tub Time Machine is way better than Modern Problems.
Oh, good. God, no. Not loads of things.
He made loads of movies.
Yeah, he has, though.
But, like...
Yeah, Community is what I know him from. I know... I think I've seen Fletch.
Oh, Fletch, yeah. That's a good one.
I think I've seen that. That looks very familiar. But all of this would have been a long time ago for me.
Mm, yeah, I mean, he was really big in the 80s and in the early 90s. But after the early 90s, he just kind of fell off the face of the earth. And then he resurfaced in the late 2000s somehow.
I don't remember being into loads of American comedy films.
Yeah.
I kind of preferred the British ones, but you know, that is a little bit of a lie because I loved Airport.
Oh,
Airplane,
yeah.
Airplane, and I loved Police Academy, and I loved anything with Eddie Murphy at the time.
So this definitely... Chevy Chase movies you would like.
I loved like loads of Richard E. Pryor stuff. So
Richard Pryor. You mixed Richard Pryor and Richard E. Grant.
That's good. Clever me.
Richard E.
Fucking
Pryor.
Idiot, though.
Oh my god. Yeah. Yeah. I liked Richard Pryor as well. Let's go. So I don't recommend Modern Problems. Even if you like Chevy Chase like I do, just watch something else. And we recommend Sharp, although I probably would not watch it because it sounds really boring for me anyway.
I love it. I think it's brilliant.
Sure. So if you're like Jamie and you like the things Jamie likes, watch Sharp. And it's in focus and everything. So
what the fuck is
just like Sean Bean. Well, isn't that the point of Sharp? That everything's really sharp and in focus?
Shut up.
that's the twist at the end, right? That it turns out that the bad guys wanted to make everything out of focus.
The big twist, and the reason why he's called Sharp is he's got a knife for a penis.
Okay. Well, I stand corrected. I recommend the show wholeheartedly. Okay.
Great.
All right, let's go to the big game for this week. It's a quick one, just a quickie. The game is called Best Worst Picture because we're talking about the Oscars, of course. And this is a little. It's not really a quiz. It's basically which of these films actually won Best Picture. Okay.
Okay.
So here we go. Which of these films won the Best Picture Oscar specifically? Not, you know, have they won an Oscar? No. Have they won the Best Picture, the most coveted of all golden statuettes? I'm overselling this. all right, first one is Raging Bull, which you've seen, of course. Everyone's seen Raging Bull. Second one is Apocalypse Now, like right now. Apocalypse Now. Third one is Rocky.
Yeah.
Don't check. Don't go on Google.
No, I'm not checking. Look, hands.
I'm watching you. Next one is Doctor Strangelove, or how I stop something about the bomb. It's too long. The full title's too long. How I learned to stop worrying and love the bomb. Okay. And the last one is Goodfellas. Goodfellas. Which of these won Best Picture?
I think it's the first one.
Raging Bull. Yeah, is that your final answer?
I guess it's quite tough. They all kind of deserve it.
Yeah, they're all good movies.
Yeah, go on then.
All right. So what would have been your second guess?
Not Apocalypse. What was the third one?
Rocky.
No. Maybe Goodfellas? That kind of feels like. Yeah, Goodfellas.
Goodfellas would have been wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Goodfellas won Best Actor. I think Joe Pesci won.
Oh, yeah. Best Actor. Yeah.
And it won the BAFTA for Best Film, but it didn't actually win Best Picture. Which is crazy, because Goodfellas, it's like, what was a film better than Goodfellas that came out that year?
No idea.
I doubt it. Whatever it was, I sincerely doubt it. Doctor Strangelove was not a Best Picture winner. I think I knew that. Because it's a cult film, I think. It's maybe a bit too weird.
Yeah.
Because it's a comedy, but it's a really dark comedy, and it's a war film, but it's not really. So it's kind of a weird one to reward with a Best Picture, I guess. But I mean, it would have deserved it. It's a masterpiece, but it won the BAFTA for Best Film, though.
Yeah.
Next up, Apocalypse Now. You didn't think it won Best Picture?
No.
It did not win Best Picture.
Military films don't always do so well.
Yeah, that's weird, actually. You would think something at least like Apocalypse Now would win, but no, it would.
I mean, it's up there with some of the best films of all time.
Oh, yeah, it really definitely is. It won.
It's an important film to watch.
Definitely. It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, though. Which is the biggest prize at Cannes. So that's kind of the same thing that happened with Pulp Fiction. Well, Pulp Fiction didn't win the Oscar. Forrest Gump won somehow. But because they felt bad, Pulp Fiction won the Cannes Palme d'Or, which is a fancier, like more indie prize of winning. But still, it's pretty good. So which leaves Raging Bull and Rocky. And Raging Bull did win the Oscar.
Yay.
For Best Actor.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. Raging Bull.
Is Rocky? Rocky is the answer.
Rocky won Best Picture back in the day.
Oh, dear.
And I think Stallone won as well. Like, it was a huge hit when it came out. Raging Bull, you know, De Niro won, of course, because he was awesome. And the film was awesome, but somehow it didn't. People were just, the Academy were assholes to Scorsese for so long.
Yeah.
They were just
what
like.
What did he end up winning it for? Was it Gangs of New York?
Not even. No, it was for The Departed.
Yeah. God, so late.
I know.
So late.
It's like for years they were like, yeah, Goodfellas. I don't know. It's not good enough. Raging Bull, nah. What do you want
Taxi
from him?
Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Nah.
No, it's what the fuck does he need to do? To fucking,
Has Tarantino won Best Film?
No. I think the closest he got was, you know, Pulp Fiction, but that didn't win. So crazy stuff. But Rocky, I mean, it's hard to argue. I mean, Rocky is a really good movie.
No. Look, of course it deserves recognition.
Yeah. I mean, now, obviously, after all the sequels, it kind of feels weird to think that a Rocky movie would be, you know, an Oscar winner,
it feels weird for a franchise like that to win it.
Yeah.
Taken in isolation, no one knew
exactly
what was coming.
At the time, you know, you wouldn't expect someone like Stallone to make something this kind of like a character
yeah,
like a character study that's actually quite like quite adult, you know. It's not like it's not a silly film at all. It's, you know, everyone plays their part really seriously. It's a and you know, there's the whole thing about like he doesn't win at the end, but you know, it's got this inspirational, at least he tried, you know.
It couldn't be more American if you tried.
Basically, his shorts are the American flag. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, no, they weren't actually, were they? That's.
Oh, are you talking about the sequel?
Yeah, I think he did maybe in the sequel. Or Apollo Creed is like dressed up like the American flag, I think, pretty much. But I think in the original, he had white shorts, Rocky. Because the whole point is that he wasn't a flashy fighter. He's just a dude who just punches meat.
Yeah.
That's his job. I mean, punching meat.
I beat meat every day, but it doesn't. Oh. They don't make a film about me.
Oh my God. On that note.
Yeah.
On a masturbatory note, let's go to the shout outs for this week. So, what's your shout out? Do you need some time to figure it out? I can give you my shout out.
Like, you go first.
My shout out is actually a shout down.
Oh, okay.
It's been a while since we've done one of those. It's a shout down for...
Or is it a shout in?
Shout in? What's a shout in?
I don't know.
Stop saying nonsense.
If a shout out is the positive, then a shout in is the negative.
No, shout. Yeah, I guess you're the one. It was you who came up with shout down.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. There's no such thing as a shout up. So I'm blaming you for this. All right. I just accepted this saying because you said it. So the shout down for this week is Ricky Gervais for being a complete knob. I don't mind Ricky Gervais in terms of like the stuff he's actually made, but lately
his recent stand up on Netflix was pretty good.
Some of it was really not that good though. It's just him reading tweets.
Yeah, fair enough.
And on Twitter, he's just turned into kind of an asshole.
And deliberately though.
Yeah, I kind of liked it when he was mostly just focusing on fundamentalist Christians and he was just taking the piss of them. I'm like fine with that because they're extremists and totally fine. But now he just wants like everybody to be offended. And I'm just like, what's the point of that, dude? That's just kind of, you're going to attract some real bad people to your side.
Yeah, but it's helped him really.
It has helped him. Yeah, definitely. You know, so. It must be a conscious, I don't know.
Well, this is the other thing, right? Is I don't know how seriously you can take him anyway, because I feel like Ricky Gervais is a character and not him.
That's what I thought. Like the David Brent movie that I saw not too long ago.
That's more,
I thought that was great because, I mean, he's playing an idiot. And so when that guy is being offensive, when David Brent is being offensive, it's like, it's fine, you know.
Yeah, but it's sort of an unspoken thing.
I think it depends on some of the jokes came off as just him being like, you know, I'm rich, all right.
Yeah,
so it's just like, I guess, but it's like,
well, no, that's, I think that's a joke in itself. It's sort of, he doesn't come across as the happiest person, you know. He comes across as someone who has a lot of stuff,
but
just not a very fulfilled person.
Who, Ricky Gervais?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I just wish that he was a bit less like just poking people just to get some kind of reaction. Just be funny. Okay.
I don't know. You're getting into weird territory where you start having to analyze comedy and then it all falls apart. So.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you should be able to analyze comedy, though. But I wasn't like sitting there analyzing his show. I was laughing when it was funny. Yeah. Like, what was the bit that was really good? I mean, the whole bit about his balls was was a bit ridiculous. That was like that reminded me of something Louis C.K. did.
Yeah. So my shout out.
Yeah, go on. Go on
is,
then.
Is to a journalist called Owen Jones.
Owen Jones.
Yeah, he's quite active in sort of like British politics. He's pretty lefty socialist guy. Mm-hmm. And I watched quite a few of his YouTube videos and interviews, and he does interviews with quite a wide variety of people, politicians, comedians, yeah. actors, you know, whatever. And, you know, I just like him because he seems like a really compassionate person, works for The Guardian quite a lot.
Yeah.
He sometimes makes me feel a bit more positive about politics in Britain because, you know.
Yeah.
It can be really negative with the whole Brexit thing, and there's quite a lot of racism or jingoism going on at the moment. And, you know, he sort of like says, no, don't worry, in time, younger people are starting to vote and socialism is starting to become more popular. And
oh, yeah, I think,
you know, so things might start to swing back towards, you know,
I think it's
a more compassionate society.
I think it's definitely a phase of some sort where it's like the pendulum is going to go one way and then people are going to realize, oh, that's too much. And it's going to go back the other way. And then it might just stabilize in the middle and then we'll be where we were pretty much, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, that's pretty much all we got for now.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm going to see Isle of Dogs this week.
Cool.
Another film actually I saw in the past couple of weeks is Annihilation, which, have you seen Annihilation?
Or no.
Maybe it comes out on Netflix directly in the UK, actually.
Oh, yes, I have seen the title.
Oh,
yeah.
You should definitely watch it. It's really good.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. So watch Annihilation. And I'm seeing Isle of Dogs, but the next time we talk, I don't know what we'll talk about. Probably Isle of Dogs, right?
Yeah. And maybe generally about Wes Anderson.
Sure. Yeah, because are you going to see those two movies you were going to...
Yeah, and I'll try and catch up on some of the others.
Sweet. Good stuff. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Jamie, for being my friend.
Thank me. Thank me.
You're thanking yourself.
Yeah.
I would just like to thank Jamie's pendulous boss.
And I'd like you to thank off.
Thanking off.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm thanking off. I'm going to go thank myself.